This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. All right, everybody. I'm already kind of giggling because this is a crazy podcast you're about to listen to. This is the first time I've ever heard of anything like this, right? People discover hunting in all different ways, all different shapes, through all different people, right? Some people start young through their family. Some people have a mentor. Some people, are adults and become interested in it and go through whatever path that leads to. But today's guest, he's into drugs. He's into doing dumb shit. He gets busted. He goes to prison for 3 years. 3 years in prison. And while he's in prison, he gets turned on through another inmate, through magazines, through reading articles about deer hunting. And this intrigues him. And he says, you know what? When I get out of here, I'm going to become a deer hunter. And gosh darn it, he does it. So, I mean, it can come from anywhere. Right. And this is the first for me. First time I've ever heard a story like this. And that's what we're doing today. Excellent, excellent episode. And I hope you guys are ready for it because it's a good one. So I'm just going to do some quick housekeeping. I'm going to do the commercials and I'm going to get right into it. But here's what I'm going to say. Please, there's a new episode of the Nine Finger Kitchen on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. Please go out and give that a view. It's a really good recipe. I made General Tso's chicken, General Tso's backstrap with some peppers and some vegetables. Man, it is really good over a bed of rice. Oh man, I'm getting hungry just talking about it. Please go to the Nine Finger Chronicles Instagram and Facebook page, follow along. Please go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts and subscribe. That's what helps me out the most is when you subscribe to one of these podcasts. And then I guess that's it, really. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, man, be sure to hit me up on Instagram or Facebook, or send me an email. And dude, I chat with anybody, absolutely anybody. So today I have a list here. Commercials, wasparchery.com. Head on over to wasparchery.com, right? You've heard me talk before. These guys are making some of the most durable, some of the toughest broadheads on the market. And they're designed that way, right? So a majority of their heads are made in America. So what we have here is the best materials, great engineering and design, all at the tip of an arrow. You make the shot, the broadhead does the damage, right? So you focus on your shot, you let the broadhead do the work, put that sucker in the right spot, and it's a dead deer every single time. And I don't know, it's just a brand that I feel confident with over time. I've never had a broadhead not work from Wasp. And that's why I just keep coming back to them and keep coming back to them and keep coming back to them, is because I'm confident in their equipment. And when you're confident in your equipment, then guess what? You're not thinking about the equipment in the heat of the moment. And dude, that's really what it's all about. So wasparchery.com, and at checkout, enter the discount code 9Fingers2021. So that's the number 9 followed by the word fingers 2021. And you're going to save 20% off of your purchase. So go take advantage of that. Next, we have Vortex Optics. Dude, Vortex is a great company. They're doing some really amazing things at the time, not only from the education standpoint, right? They have something right now called the Vortex Edge, I believe it's called. Let me pull this up real quick. Yeah, the Vortex Edge. And it's basically just really good training on firearms, how to shoot. And I'm not a firearms guy, right? So I can appreciate the education that these guys are taking out of, you know, their busy day. They're not focusing so much on the sales, but they're focusing on the end user, which in turn could generate some sales, but they're really focused on giving back to their end users. And man, that makes lifelong customers. And I'll tell you right now, just through using the VIP warranty on two different occasions with my binoculars, they have a lifelong customer in myself, just because not only are their products durable, they're tough, they are amazing optics. So like when you look through them, it's crystal clear in a variety of different conditions, whether it's bright outside or it's dark, you know, it's getting towards that gray light time frame. They have binoculars that work in a variety of different conditions, including spotting scopes, including rifle scopes, including range finders. They have accessories like tripods now. They have an apparel line that's badass. So Vortex is doing some really good things, and they give back to the hunting community. So vortexoptics.com. Go check out all their product lines. Man, I love my spotting scopes that I have from them, and I also love my binoculars. So take that into consideration. Other than that, we have Hunt Stand, and Hunt Stand is a newer partner this go around, and I'm playing on it, right? You're doing your digital scouting any time of day. You're laying out a detail, it's information, right? It's basically an information gathering platform where when you're out in the field and you see a rub or you see a scrape or you see a deer or you see a bed or you put your trail cameras or an access route or you can map out a food plot, you can know the wind direction, you can know the property owner's name, you can know the boundaries between private and public. Like, this app is just crazy with all the functionality behind it, right? So you can download the app for free, and then you can upgrade to the pro platform. And check this out, this is no joke, it's $30 a year for all that functionality. And it's no wonder why that app is the number one downloaded hunting app, I guess, if you want to call it a hunting app, that there is, man. It's badass. Tons of functionality. It's hunter friendly, and it allows you to just gather information and put yourself in the best position possible every single time you go out into the woods. So if you want to find out more about Hunt Stand, you can go download it at Google Play or anywhere that apps are downloaded, or you can find out more information at huntstand.com. Yeah, badass app. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Huge shout out to all the brands. Huge shout out to you for taking time out of your day to listen to this. And let's get rocking. 3, 2, 1. All right. On the phone with me now from Florida, Mr. Justin Henry. Justin, how we doing, man?
Not too bad, man. How about yourself?
It's going good. You staying dry down there?
We actually just had a tropical storm slash hurricane came through this afternoon, but in true Florida fashion, been outside shooting my bow and no worries.
No worries, huh? that's funny. I just had a hurricane come through or a big storm come through, and now I'm shooting my bow. No problem. What
it got me off of work, so that's a plus.
let me ask you a couple questions. What is it like? Does it rain all the time down there in Florida? Like when I was down there, it'd be like once a day it rained, but then it was gorgeous the rest of the day.
It's seasonal. You know, we're hitting our rainy season, which starts usually about May, and then usually about September, October, it starts to lay down for a little bit, and that's when our weather, the humidity tends to, I guess you can call it, leaving. Last year was an anomaly. We had some fantastic cool weather it was 69 on opening day of bow season, which was super shocking, and we had quite a winter. But, yeah, normally the rainy season's over October-ish.
Okay. So let's see here. What part of Florida are you from?
Osteen, which is about 30 minutes south of Daytona Beach.
Daytona Beach. So you're way down there, huh?
Yep.
I gotcha. So what's that next major city south of Daytona Beach? That's Naples, somewhere around there?
No, we would have, Daytona, Sebastian, Fort Myers. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Fort Myers is a good 3.5 hours away.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, everybody that I've ever talked to about hunting in Florida has been down in that, whether it's from Tallahassee or Orlando, maybe somewhere around there. You guys are, let me see, where's Daytona? I'm trying to find Daytona here. I think I know where Daytona's at. Tampa. Where is Daytona?
East Coast, about the middle of the state.
Oh, Daytona Beach. Okay. All right. So you are up in that area. Okay. I had Tampa and Daytona Beach all mixed up, but I got my bearings now. So, you know, that's somewhat of a high population area. What's your travel like when you have to go to try to find a place to hunt?
I'm kind of fortunate. We do have a place. We just bought a house, me and my wife, back in January. And there's actually a piece of public grounds 3 minutes from my house. The only problem is it's on the smaller side and highly, highly pressured. Even though that is where I shot my first deer at, but that I tend to stay out of that area. So the next best place is about 50 minutes to an hour. You know, first thing in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, no traffic, but come in the afternoon, you hit traffic. So, you know, hour and 10 minutes or so.
I gotcha. All right. So I got a whole bunch of questions about Florida and that kind of deal. But, what do you do for a living?
I am a foreman for a site construction company.
Okay. And what kind of construction do you do?
So we do anything from the underground to the roads to the dirt work, digging the ponds. We'll come in and clear the property and build it all the way up till the developer starts going vertical, starts building houses on it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And how many years have you been doing that?
I've been, I guess, about 11.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So... You have a very interesting story when it comes to getting into hunting, right? And I'll just kind of go through this process with you real quick. Did you grow up in a hunting family? Did you know anything about hunting before this certain point in your life?
Zero.
Zero. Okay, zero. All right, so we have to start this in what seems to be kind of a shitty part in your life, right? Let's see. You ended up having to go to prison. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about what led you to be incarcerated?
So anybody who knows anything about the opiate crisis knows that, like, the threshold of it all was kind of in Florida. I got caught up in the whole opiate crisis and found myself as an addict and got caught up doing some stupid stuff one day and wound up in jail, and that proceeded to prison time.
Yeah. And how many years were you incarcerated?
Three total.
Three. Okay. However, you like to look at a situation like this: drugs, bad; prison, bad. But while you're in prison, why don't you talk to us about this guy you met in prison and how this spark for hunting was lit?
So when you first get to prison, you try to, I guess, find people that are semi-associated to your personality, in a sense, friends, trying to decipher right friends from wrong friends, I guess, more or less. So in Florida, I forget how many counties we have, but there's a prison in every county except for like three. And there's like 100-something counties in the state of Florida. So needless to say, there's prisons everywhere, but they ship a lot of people up towards the panhandle, which is what they call North Florida, and just kind of that panhandle area. So it's real country up there. I happened to start talking to a gentleman who slept a few bunks down. I constantly see him with hunting magazines, and it kind of just piqued my interest. You know, you don't have a lot to do but read and play cards, I guess, more or less, and work out. But I asked him if I could, read one of his magazines, and got to reading it. And, you know, keep in mind, I've come up from a country bringing. I've fished my whole life. Everybody in my family fishes. My mom did have a boyfriend for a few years that hunted, all rifle hunting and stuff. So, you know, I've eaten deer meat before, and, you know, just kind of, you live such a rough life leading up to the events that get you into prison. And you kind of, while you're in there, you kind of got time to figure out who you really are. So you tend to fall back on your roots, you know, how your mom or dad raised you. And, I kind of just reading some of the hunting magazines. Not that I've ever been hunted, but I kind of felt, I don't know, like that could definitely be me. Like I could dig this. This seems like right up my alley. And really just every single month when he got a new magazine, it wasn't bow hunting. I don't even remember what magazine it was. Probably more sided on the rifle end of things, but deer hunting nonetheless. And, yeah, you know, it showed all these fantastic places like Iowa and, you know, Illinois and Alberta and all these other cool places, but never Florida. So we got to talking, and, you know, he does a lot of like hog hunting. We are highly overpopulated with hogs, so it's nothing to go in the woods and shoot a hog at any time.
Yeah.
But yeah, one thing led to another, and we kind of just became buddies, and I would just read hunting magazines and just kind of fell in love with it from afar.
Yeah. So did it ever occur to you that while you're in there and you had something that you were, you started to become interested in, did you think that it would ever lead to the passion that it might be today?
Oh, never in a million years. I'm so, I'm sure all of our wives think we're crazy when it comes to bow hunting, but I mean, I'm so engulfed in it. It's ridiculous. I mean, from 3D archery to, I have my own little bow shop. I got a bow press. I mean, I have everything to do my own work in my little, I call it the doghouse, little aluminum shed, which I actually just shot an arrow through the shed before I got on the phone with you, which is kind of funny. So, but, archery is just fell in love with it, man.
Yeah. So let's see here. So when you were in prison and you started reading these magazines, I mean, how much of your time there was really focused on hunting? I know there's, for someone who's never been in prison, there's a whole bunch of questions I have about that, but, did this guy who had the hunting magazines in some way become like a, a mentor to you? Did he talk to you a lot about hunting or hunting strategy or different versions of like wild game versus small game versus deer versus turkeys, anything like that?
No, not really. You know, he might have shared a few stories here and there of him going hunting, but most of my learning came when I got out.
Gotcha. So while you were in, though, what did you learn anything, or did you have any realizations or big time takeaways while you were in there?
Not too much. Most of the stories of the magazines, you know, these big outfitted hunts, and, you know, hindsight now I know while reading them, the difference, you know, they didn't really talk much about public lands or anything of the such. It was just kind of, you know, your stereotypical story, you know, a couple pages, they talk about going out and, you know, sitting in a tree stand and, you know, big old buck comes around the corner after hitting a scrape or something, and, you know, you shoot it and it's the greatest day of his life, and it all seemed intriguing.
Gotcha. So, you know, as your incarceration time was coming to an end, did you start to put any type of plan together that was like, man, okay, here's what I'm going to do to get focused on this new thing that I'm interested in?
So I'm a very spiritual person, if you want to put it that way. You know, I've grew up in church my whole life, just kind of fell off the wagon there. And while being incarcerated, you know, I gave my life back to the Lord and kind of let him take the reins. And it just so happens that while I got to work release, I end up meeting a girl that I went to church with when I was younger. And we got to talking and I guess started dating, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, it's dating, I guess, as much as you could possibly see the person that comes see you, you know, on visitation. And I had home passes at that particular time. So I had a job, so I was allowed to come home and see my mom. And she would come over. Her name is Emily, who is now my wife. So when we first met, she's like, oh, you know, I asked, I don't even remember how the conversation started, but she's like, yeah, my stepdad bow hunts. Really? So, you know, I would ask her some questions and she would relay, you know, what little information she knew about it. But she's like, you know, whenever you get out, I'm sure you guys, you know, he'll take you out and show you and everything like that. So, you know, while the months leading up to it, you know, I think I started getting a bow hunting magazine. I think I got Peterson's bow hunting magazine. She started sending me. So I. Peterson's hunting magazines. And so I was able to start learning about bows and stuff like that. And I believe within the first week of me being out, I went to a pawn shop. I spoke to her stepdad, and he kind of pointed me in the right direction, said I might be able to go to a particular place and buy a bow. And I ended up buying a used PSE bow and, you know, 12 arrows and all this good stuff and started shooting.
Yeah. So what was so you had this thing, and I'll be honest with you. I went through a period of time in my early 20s and I settled down a little bit, and I was pretty much just worthless up until I was 30, right? And then it really started like my drinking and my social life and all that other dumb shit that we all do kind of settled down, right? But throughout my 20s, I say this to people. I say, I feel like there's points of an 11-year period where I really just wasted time. And it's one of those things where, like, unless, I don't know, I wasn't taking advantage of life, right? So in somewhere around 2006, I picked up a bow and arrow again from my childhood, and I just cannonballed into that. And that pulled me up, not all the way out of it, but it pulled, bow hunting eventually pulled me out of all of that. So all of my time, all of my energy was dedicated to bow hunting or educating myself about bow hunting in some way, shape, or form. And that led to where I'm at today. So, you know, and I know, was bow hunting something that you had planned to rely on, or archery or anything like that, now that you had, you know, quote unquote, found Jesus in prison, and now that you're out, you pick up that bow, and were you kind of going to rely on that to help focus you on something else?
Absolutely. That was, you know, besides, you know, having a family, that was my drive, and that's what kept me clean and kept me, just gave me back that drive of life. Just found so much therapy in shooting, and, you know, I got out 6 months before opening day of bow season. So, you know, you're talking, no, I take that back. It was 3.5 months. I got out in June, and I started scouting at the end of June, beginning of July with her stepdad.
Okay, that's cool. Were there any restrictions after your incarceration, like certain felons can't own handguns or something like that? Did you have any restrictions?
Correct. No restrictions. Nothing of the sort. As long as I didn't have a gun, all archery equipment is legal.
Gotcha. Okay. So it just kind of, you got out and you instantly got into it. Sometimes you take it for granted. A guy can take it for granted, all the freedoms that we have in this country. And then all your freedoms taken away, right? You're on somebody else's schedule, not your own.
Yep.
At that point, you get out. What was that like? I mean, did you go hard at this scouting and deer hunting thing once you got out?
Oh, absolutely. Jason, who is her stepdad, me and him, he's as diehard as the next person. Every weekend, you know, 6 hours on a Saturday, maybe a few hours on a Sunday, putting cameras out, showing me, you know, all the ins and the outs, what to look for. And it was constant.
Yeah. So you have this freedom now, you're going hard at it. And the season, you know, like, so only three months to really prepare. And that's to not only gather intel of where to hunt, but honing your skills as an archer as well. What was that 3 month period like before the season actually opened?
Frustrating, exciting. You know, it seemed like a lot to try to take in. You know, being new to it, you rely, I guess, a lot on trail cameras. So you get a picture of a doe and you're excited, and you know, I'm like, oh, sweet, I got some does walking through. And because I didn't care what I was going to shoot, buck, doe, it didn't matter to me. You know, I just wanted to get that first deer on the ground. And
you're excited. Just, you were excited.
Just purely excited. Yeah.
That's awesome. So where did, and you mentioned frustrated, where did the frustration come into play?
I guess, trying to, in Florida, the layout of Florida is just so different compared to anywhere else. You know, I know everybody says, oh, my state's the hardest or whatever the case may be, but Florida is just relentless. Our swamps are just the gnarliest swamps. I mean, snakes, gators, spiders, I mean, anything and everything, moccasins, rattlesnakes, the whole nine yards, it's everywhere. And the deer tend to want to stay kind of in that cooler area that the swamp gives, and just trying to find trails and old sign from the year before, because I hadn't seen fresh sign yet before. So trying to judge old sign, you know, I went out there a couple times by myself that were, you know, my buddy wouldn't have gone with me, and just trying to figure it out, you know, kind of on your own, I guess, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So you're frustrated, you're excited. When does Florida's archery season open?
Usually about the somewhere between September 15th and September 19th, usually every year, depending on how that Saturday falls.
Okay. And so September hits. I take it you had a job at that. Did you have a job at that point?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had a job, and at this point you have a girlfriend. Is she your wife yet?
No, she, still girlfriend at the time.
Okay. So you got a girlfriend, you got a job, you have other things in your life aside from hunting. What was your goal that first season as far as, trying to hunt and hunt as much as possible to continue that drive now that you're out of jail?
Goal really to, I think everybody's main goal obviously would be to shoot something, but really just to see some deer, get that encounter, know what it's like, to have your legs shake out from underneath you, to draw back on a deer if the opportunity arises.
Yeah. So, on top of that, right? Did any of those old habits or old friends that got you in trouble in the first place kind of try to creep back in your life? Because I know that when it comes to addiction, and I've seen it from friends that I used to have, they're unfortunately no longer, they're really not my friends anymore because addiction has taken them in a different direction. But they serve their prison time. They come out clean. They're clean and living a healthy life for a little bit. Then they get pulled back in. Was that temptation ever there when you got out?
Oh, absolutely. It was kind of a hit or miss thing. I guess usually when you're bored or on downtime, the old saying, idle hands is the devil's workshop, I guess. But it's really the truth, though. I mean, it's when you're not staying constantly busy. And I think that's a big reason why I stay as busy as I do now. I mean, my wife tells me constantly, she's like, you're nonstop. I don't sit down for too long. It's hard for me to sit down and watch 2 or 3 hours of TV. I'm constantly up, down, doing stuff. But yes, the temptations were definitely there.
Yeah. And how were you able to overcome those temptations?
The starting the work of a family, just having everything. I had a good job. I had a girlfriend, who I knew I wanted to propose to. I have a daughter from a previous relationship before I went to prison. I was trying to rekindle that relationship and get back on the right side, improve myself, of course, because everybody's heard it 1,000 times. Oh, I've changed. So, having to prove yourself, just really having that drive,
Awesome. So, that's good, right? I mean, your life is coming back together, right? In a positive way. You have positive reinforcement in your life. It sounds like you have a good family structure that's there through your girlfriend, your stepdad, maybe even some of your other family members. You have hunting that is starting to become a passion of yours. You're trying to work an older daughter or a daughter back into your life from when you were, before prison or whatever. And, so I just see this path in front of you, like, oh my God, everything's going great. Now, how did that first hunting season go for you?
So the very first day, the very first morning, sunlight's cracking over the canopy, and all of a sudden there's a doe standing in front of me at like 20 yards. Well, I got just way too excited, went to go reach for my bow, and as soon as I reached for my bow, she blew and ran.
Right.
And that's exactly how that went for quite some time.
I'll be honest with you. I'm glad you said it that way, because if you were like, the sun came up, there was a doe standing in front of me, I drew back and drilled her. That's not how my first experiences with hunting went.
No,
they went exactly like your first experience with hunting went, where it's just like, what am I doing wrong? Just blowing all over the place. So what did you learn from those experiences?
Really, I mean, just movement is so key. I'm kind of not big on heights, so I'm not the kind of guy that's going to be sitting in my climber at the time. A climber, 23, 25 foot off the ground, that ain't happening. I'm more like a 15, 16 foot, maybe 17 if I'm feeling froggy on that day kind of person. So I knew my movement was so critical, slow movements. Just movement was just so key.
Yeah.
I think that was my biggest ordeal. I mean, I think maybe if I would have actually slowed it down, I might have actually been able to maybe even draw back on her for all I know.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny you say that. I had a guy who, at the time, I was filming all of my hunts, and this guy's like, "Hey, I want to break into the media industry. I'm willing to be a camera guy and do some editing." So I had this guy. I'm like, "All right, well, let's pop up in this Lone Wolf and sit, and I'll kind of run you through how all the filming works, and then we can talk to you a little bit about the editing." And this he gets to the tree stand and he goes, "Well, I just also want to let you know that I'm not a big fan of heights." And this guy was scared white. Like, he was trying to hug the tree as close as possible. Here I am, several years of experience, just zipping up and down the tree. He's like, he's so scared he can't even run the camera when the deer start coming by. I'm just like, "Hey, man, you might want to think what profession you want to get into, because this is not for you." So you say that. How high off the ground were you that first year?
Probably, I would say about 13 foot off the ground.
Well, that seems, it's lower than what I go, but it seems still somewhat high compared to some guys I know who hunt real low to the ground. So you felt that movement was a big point for you, where you were failing all of the time and you were getting busted because of your movement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So after that, did you get that movement was the cause of this problem? Did you start slowing down? Were you able to have deer come by you and not get spooked at all that first year?
No, truthfully, it was a struggle to even get on deer. Okay. Our population, I'd say, is pretty good. The ratio's off, but like I said before, Florida's just it's monotonous. It's the same thing over again. Palmetto flats, pine trees, and cedar swamps, and some oak trees, of course. But just really, sit after sit after sit, no interaction. Maybe see something every 10th sit, you might see a doe down, 100, 200 yards away if you were sitting on like a field edge or a little two track or something like that. But yeah. the encounters were rare.
Gotcha. All right. So you struggled through that first year. Did you end up killing a deer at all?
Not the first year. Nope.
Right, not the first year. All right. So second year comes around, you have a little bit more time to prep. You have a little bit more scouting time, under your belt throughout that summer and preparation with your equipment and stuff like that. What was your goal, after you've had a real struggle first season, which can be fairly normal, even in states where the deer hunting may be considered easier. What was your goal going into that second season?
To have more encounters, for sure. Yeah. To kind of hone what you learned in the first season, and a little more practicing out of the tree stand shooting instead of always staying on the ground shooting, getting comfortable with climbing, using a climber. That was kind of, I had no problem with ladder stands, but dragging a ladder stand in and out of public land just doesn't make sense. So it was always a climber, and just getting comfortable really out of a climber and wanting to have some encounters, opportunities.
Yeah. So you know, now backtracking a little bit, that's your goal. It sounds to me like you put in the work during the off season to try to make that goal a reality.
Yes.
Yeah. And what did you do specifically as far as scouting is concerned?
Same thing, you know, started maybe a little month earlier. We usually start around June. Our patterns, you know, down here they're already hard horned. I say half the deer right now are already hard horned. I mean, South Florida, we got three zones, but South Florida is their opening season, their opening days in like 4 weeks,
okay,
5 weeks. So, just kind of lost my train of thought there.
The scouting portion of it.
The scouting. Yeah. So, putting more trail cam, you know, I bought like two more trail cameras. So I had like three trail cameras and, trying to just figure out where these deer wanted to be, you know, talking, listening. I don't think I was listening to podcast. No, I wasn't listening to podcasts at that time, but just talking to anybody and everybody that I could about that I knew hunted, asking them questions and just trying to figure out exactly what I'm doing wrong, you know, why they're seeing deer and why I'm not.
Yeah. Okay. So did at the second season comes around, did that scouting, did that additional prep work start to pay off?
There were times it was definitely easier than the first season. The second season, I did have a few more encounters, but still wasn't able to close the deal on the second year.
Okay. Was there any takeaways from the second year? Did you understand what you were doing wrong? And then were you able to make adjustments off of that incorrect action?
Yeah. I don't think I could really pinpoint an exact thing. I think just time, you know, being new to it, going through all the newbie aches and pains, I guess, of bow hunting, no understanding that this stuff is hard. It's not for the faint of heart. It's 100 degrees when you're walking in and out of those woods, and really having to get away from people.
Yeah.
Is key down here. I mean, there's two tracks everywhere. I mean, we're running like blocks. A lot of our public lands are ran by timber companies, and you know, so they got to have their road access roads. So I started to realize the further off the road you get, it seems to be a little better.
Yeah. Okay. So you were living that public land life, right? I mean, you were
from the get go.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So year two, kind of a bust. It's kind of a little bit of the same, but a little easier than year number one. Perfectly normal, if you were to ask me, as far as a new bow hunter is concerned. Hunting some public ground, high pressure, thick, nasty terrain, all that good stuff. What,
yep.
Year three, year four, you know, how much longer did it take you for something to click or for you to become more efficient?
So season three starts. We had a hurricane come in opening weekend. So basically a lot of the public lands were closed down, all that good stuff. So the following weekend is, I guess, second weekend, but opening weekend for most people. So I tell the wife, I said, hey, I'm going out here to so-and-so, and I'll be hunting. It's an evening hunt. I didn't get to get out in that morning. And since we had all that rain, it was kind of flooded out, so it had pushed the deer up. So as I'm walking to my – I got my climber on my back, maybe 200 yards, I'd say about 300 yards from the parking lot, and all of a sudden I hear some deer in the Palmetto Flats go running. I was like, oh, they're already up here moving and feeding around. So I creep up to my – where I want to hang my stand, and as I drop my climber onto the ground – I hear some movement behind me, and I slowly, as I had learned, slowly went to go look back behind me, and there was a doe 20 yards behind me, kind of behind the palmettos, staring at me, had me pinned. I'm like, oh, man. I was like, here's my chance for the day, and I got my climber on the ground, my bow's on the ground, no arrow, knock, no duck. I did have my release on. I did learn to walk in with my release, especially in the evening time. I said, well, if this is meant to be, she's going to continue to stand there. So I slowly reached down. I was able to get my bow. And I looked back. You know, I'm kind of looking at her, looking at what I'm doing. And as I got my bow, she stomped again. I was able to knock an arrow. And I drew back and shot her.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. So she all of a sudden just kind of disappears. I was like, man, did she run off? Did I miss? What happened? So I, instead of me going and chasing her straight down, I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and finish setting up my tree stand, my climber, and I'm going to climb up and I'll sit for a little bit and get, you know, I got so much adrenaline pumping through me, I could barely talk. I was trying to figure out, you know, what the next move is. And it was just, I wanted to call somebody. So I climb up like 10 feet in my climber, and I turn around, and she's laying right there.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
So how jacked were you?
Jacked? Oh, my goodness. I could have ran home. It was just, I was so excited. I called my wife and, you know, I was crying and just all that hard work. I mean, 2 years of grinding and grinding and grinding, and opening day, first 10 minutes. I hadn't been there in 10 minutes and I had a deer on the ground.
Yeah. With a little luck, right?
Yeah. With a lot of luck.
A little luck, right? And sometimes luck, you were in the right spot. That's the takeaway, right? Maybe it didn't
Correct.
Go
yep.
as you planned, where you were set up and the deer came by and you shot it from the tree stand. You were in the right spot. That's where the deer were at. You knew where you were. You needed yep. to be there. And sure enough, it paid off for you. So you get your first ever deer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like you, they get jacked and it's just this additional motivation. Some people may be like, well, that's all right. And then some people are just like, well, it's not as cool as I thought it was. Right. Sounds to me that you were, that was the ultimate motivator for you. One of them anyway, you shot this first ever doe. What was the rest of that season like for you?
That season, I had a few more encounters, just wasn't able to close the door on the, just got that one doe that season.
Okay. All right. So what were you thinking about the rest of the season? Like, hey, I got one deer. Why is this next deer still so hard to get?
I think I wanted a buck. You know what I mean?
It's
just, I want to shoot a buck. My father-in-law's got all these deer on the wall, and you stare at him like, oh man, I can't wait. And I guess the sad part is, you know, by me finally shooting that doe, in my head, I felt like I signified myself as a bow hunter finally.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not just this guy who walks around with the bow and talks about it all the time. I actually shot something.
Yeah.
And that was a weird place for me, you know, because I knew that it's supposed to be more than just that. And it was more than that. But I guess mentally, 2 years of, you know, not shooting anything and doing – feeling like you're doing everything right and nothing coming from it.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, this in a way I have a bit of a, I relate to you in that, because I have these people, they send me elk and mule deer t-shirts and I'm just like I've killed tons of whitetails with a bow, but
yeah.
I have not killed an elk and I have not killed a mule deer with a bow. And I said to myself, like, I don't feel like I should be wearing, you know, I'm a elk hunter t-shirt
I'm
a mule deer hunter t-shirt, because I haven't killed those things yet. I want to be, I'm a wannabe
right.
in that category. And I work hard to go do those things, but it's like, I get it, man. I get where you're coming from on that. So you walked into a doe on year number three. You know, was after that, was there any aha moments that you had throughout maybe year number, because you're 8 years in, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're 8 years into bow hunting, and is this upcoming season going to be year number 8 or year number 9?
This will be year number 8.
Okay, year number 8. So 7 years under your belt. In that year 4, 5, 6, 7, what else have you learned? I mean, have you found success yet? Consider consistent success?
Yes, now I finally feel like I have.
Led up to that?
I think mentors, just kind of, grinding a little bit harder and learning this, and I picked up on some podcasts and just engulfed myself in everything bow hunting. I mean, anything that had to do with the bow and hunting, I was there. I was all about it. Let me read it. Let me retain the information. Let me watch it on YouTube. Let me soak it in. Now, a lot of it's not relevant towards Florida based, but my wife's stepdad and another buddy of us, we all go to the same church, and they've been going to Kentucky every year for the past few years. And I was kind of on the sideline, kind of like waiting for the invite. And finally, year 4, I got the invite. So that's a whole new stage of jacked. I'm like, oh man, I get to go up to where there's some good bucks and maybe the deer will start doing what you know you see on TV and all this other stuff. And of course, Kentucky was a struggle at first too, because trying to figure a whole new type of terrain out, whole new deer movements, everything. You know, they actually have a rut. I mean, we have a rut, but nothing like the Midwest or Kentucky or something like that. So we got up to Kentucky year 4, and it was a struggle, but it was fun. Buddy shot some deer, nothing too crazy. And I did have an opportunity at some deer I missed. Year 5 was actually good. Year 4, I shot a spike. And I shot him high, and we trailed him for like 500 yards and for hours, and I never found him.
Okay.
So that was a bummer. You know, I wasn't ashamed to shoot a spike. I wanted to shoot a spike really bad. I did shoot two spikes in Florida. Let me see. I don't know. It was either maybe year 3 I shot a spike in a doe, and then I shot a spike in Florida on like the 4th year. Either way, I was trying to work myself up, but it was all the opportunities I got were does and spikes, so I was taking them.
Yeah,
kind of just brown it down, get it under my belt.
Yeah, and that is the best thing to do, man. I tell you right now, I went through a stage where I thought I needed to shoot big bucks only, and I passed a ton of opportunity to just shoot deer. And it led to me not being comfortable around shooting deer. And when the big boy stepped out, I kind of crapped my pants a little bit. And you know what I mean? And I didn't have the composure that I needed.
Yep, absolutely.
So,
go ahead.
The rest of, like, year 6, year 5, year 6, I mean, has the strategy started to click with you yet out there? Have, you know, through all this time now spent scouting down in Florida, have you been able to locate deer easier?
Yes, a lot easier. In comparison, a lot easier. It's still, you know, same kind of grind and struggle to really hone in on them. And I'm not hunting particular deer. I mean, I do, even if I get them on camera a few times in like a 2-month period, I mean, I kind of know maybe the area, and if it's kind of on a luck thing on a particular deer, but if a good one walks in, I'm definitely going to shoot it. And I'm kind of just working myself up. I shot an old 8-point. He was broken up on this one side last year on a quota hunt that we had down here. So I'd shot him in Florida. And then in Kentucky, things were really clicking. Last year was a phenomenal year. I mean, I had days that looked like something off of the Outdoor, the Sportsman channel. I mean, deer, just big, good 130s running everywhere, just outside of range, seeing bucks fight. I mean, just it was just one of those incredible year. I mean, I brisket shot probably 100 and I'd say a low 130s, 12 point on the very first morning in Kentucky last year, and that was very sickening. Extremely sickening.
Yeah,
I thought I was gonna. I switched to saddle hunting. I bought a saddle, thinking that might cure some of my height issues. Just kind of feeling more secure, and it has. It really has. It's been phenomenal. But I had this bright idea without trying it out that I missed an opportunity to shoot a buck down here in Florida because I hadn't practiced my offside shot on the saddle, and I end up whiffing on that opportunity. So I was like, I need a bigger platform. So I was like, well, maybe I can use the bottom part of my climber and I'll have a bigger platform and I'll just hang in my saddle. No big deal. So first morning in Kentucky, I hike up to this ridge, you know, you're pumped with energy. It's November 5th. It's just, you know, let's go. And I get to the tree and I hook up the bottom part of my climber and hook up my saddle and realize that I have no way to climb up. My body sits too close. When I go limp on the saddle, I don't have no way to sit to bring my legs up. So here I am looking like a jackass at 6 o'clock in the morning on top of this ridge. And I'm basically stuck sitting on the stand of my climber. So I'm kind of just leaning up against the tree. It's comes to be about 8:30. I was like, you know what? At least it's a beautiful morning. If I see something cool, I'll move on it this afternoon. I didn't really expect any opportunity to happen. And about 9 o'clock, I just happened to look over my left shoulder, and here he comes 40 yards down. Like I'm about like 2/3 up the ridge, and he comes walking. He's going to be about 40 yards, but I got a little bit of brush. If he stops there, I'm going to have a little bit of brush in front of him. But, of course, it's the first morning, and I'm like, maybe I could just thread the needle. You've been practicing, Justin. I was shooting some 3D archery stuff, just some tournaments and stuff. I was like, you can thread the needle. You got this. Well, I thread the needle, but it ricocheted off of a branch, and instead of going back, it went forward, and I ended up brisket shooting them.
Dang.
Yeah.
Tough.
But, you live and you learn.
Yeah, that's a fact. All right, so going into your eighth season now, where are we at? Like, what's your goal? What's your confidence level of trying to complete a season with maybe not only the locating the deer, the strategy standpoint, but the actually getting an arrow in a deer and killing him? Where are we at? You know, leading into year eight.
Feeling pretty confident. I've been deploying cameras down here for the past 3.5 months. Actually just pulled cards last weekend and got a pretty good dandy on there, you know, for Florida to have an 80. So in Florida, 100 inches makes the record book in Florida. So, 100 inches is like the mark down here in Florida. So I got a 70 to an 80 incher and one maybe even a little bit bigger than that that's been on camera. So I'm kind of feeling like I'm in the right area. I just hopefully no hurricanes, real bad hurricanes happen before opening day because that throws a wrench in all sorts of stuff.
Awesome. Well, dude, it sounds like you've got your bearings together, right? Or whatever that saying is, the compass is pointing in the right direction and you're able to learn from, all of the years that you've been hunting. And sometimes it can definitely take longer in an environment like Florida, I'm guessing. I've never hunted Florida, but you hear that Florida's a rough place to hunt, especially in the terrain and the environment that you're hunting in, thus driving the learning curve, drawing it out a little bit more. So, but it sounds like you're on the right path.
Yeah. I did end up shooting one up in Kentucky. Shot a decent little 7 point, nothing to write crazy home about, but I was, when I say jacked, Oh man, I was even more jacked than the buck I shot down here in Florida, because it was like I finally put the puzzle pieces together. I was in the deer all week, and just the excitement level was really there. So it's going to be a good season.
That's awesome, man. So this year you're hunting Kentucky and Florida again. You taking any other trips?
No, I was supposed to do Illinois with some guys that I shoot tournaments with, but the dates are going to be up there in November. Like the November 8th through the 15th, and I'm already going to be in Kentucky. I go up there for 10 days. We got some family that lives like 10 minutes away from two units that are bow only, and it's like we have them to ourselves. Yeah, we got a little 60-acre private parcel that butts up to one of them on the backside, so we kind of have like VIP access to the back without having to cut 2.5-3 miles all the way to get to the back from the front.
Ooh, that's a win.
It's a major win, and that's how we really dialed them in last season. We think we really figured some things out, so we're both pretty excited to get up there this year and see what it's about.
Sounds good, man. Well, hey, awesome story, and I'm glad you're part of the whitetail community. And the only thing that I can say is good luck this upcoming season, and definitely keep me posted on your success.
No, I absolutely will, man. I appreciate it.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Again, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to download this podcast. Huge shout out to all the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. We have Wasp, Vortex, Hunt Stand, Ozonix, Lone Wolf, Exodus, and Excalibur. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast, right? All of these companies are making very good products. They've been around for a good chunk of time, and they have staying power, and that is because they have high quality products, right? And they care about the end user. So go check them out. Again, Nine Finger Chronicles on Instagram and Facebook. Please go to the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. Check it out. I uploaded some Nine Finger Kitchen episodes. And last but not least, man, be kind to your neighbor. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.